Doctor, which side are you on, good or evil? Who's for evil? Let's hear it. Come on. Come on, let's go. Is that all you can muster up for evil? Nothing is sadder than the sight of an American on Saturday night applauding the abstract concept of evil with a cheeseburger in front of him and some Diet Pepsi to wash it down. I mean, you know, it is kind of sad when you think of the whole Diet Pepsi world. The world where everywhere they say they're taking tars out of cigarettes. They're taking all of it out. In fact, the other day, I'm standing in a line in the supermarket, and ahead of me is this gnarled-looking lady, see? And she's ahead of me. You know, how many of you have worked on special looks on the face when you're pushing your supermarket cart? You know, you don't want to look too happy. Somehow, that means you're in a materialistic slob. Secretly, most of us love to go to supermarkets. Oh, wow, look at all that stuff. I want it all. You know? But so, you know, you don't want to admit this when you walk through the supermarket. You know, once in a while, a little kid will be honest. You know, a real little kid. He doesn't know yet that you've got to be in this world. You've got to be hip. And have you ever seen a little kid ahead of you who magically has developed 74 arms? You know, and he's got 9 mouths going. I want to eat it! I want it, Mommy! Superman, Daddy! Flipper drinks this all the time! Yes, Flipper drinks it all the time. But so this kid runs through the life that he's in, and he is what he is. Have you ever seen probably the most epitome of all slob television shows? Have you seen that show that comes on in the middle of the day when they get 9 people standing there with a supermarket cart? You ever seen that show? You wouldn't believe it. It makes the Romans look like kid stuff. Yeah, you ought to see that show. And they have a gun, see, and they get all these couples. They always get young couples, see. They all stand next to their supermarket cart looking, you know that look that contestants have on an Alan Ludden show? You know, like they've had a little too much Novocaine. And they're all from places like Piqua, Ohio. And there they stand, see, and that guy holds a gun, they've got a stopwatch. They say, now, here we go. On your mark. It's time once again for Supermarket Slob Hour. Get set. Grab all you can grab in just 15 seconds. And the guy that grabs the most wins the big ding-dong grabberoni. Ready? Go! Boom! And they go, ha! And their faces change. Instantly, their eyes get narrow. And they grow steel fangs, and they start grabbing. One guy on the show that I watched had 37 frozen turkeys. I mean, what the hell is he going to do with 37 frozen turkeys? And they all weighed 12 pounds apiece. He and his wife came down that aisle. They looked like a pile of frozen turkeys in an avalanche going downhill. And the crowd applauded. And I sat there, see, and I said, gee, you know, this is a program about sin. Has it occurred to you that not all sins relate to sex? Has it, gang? Well, you know, there's an old sin called greed. That can also be called drive. In some circles, that's called ambition. I mean, that's in the Robert Moses circle. In other circles, it's called executive ability. I mean, there's a lot of ways you can hide these things, see? So the other day, I'm in the supermarket, see, and ahead of me is this lady. And she's, you know, there's always one lady that you always get behind in a supermarket line who wants to pay by check. And it's usually drawn on a Yugoslavian bank. And they want to first transmit it, you know, translate it to Dropniks. And there you are, you see. You're in the line that says Express. And, you know, here's this, you know, the kid standing behind the cash register with the shades on. Don't you always feel vaguely inferior to this kid? I mean, he looks at your stuff and says, oh, my God, a cocoa drinker. I mean, have you ever had the kid that draws value judgment on what you buy? Like, he turns around and says, hey, Manny, here's another Yoo-Hoo one. How much? Oh, yeah, like, you know, I tell you, you see, the real man comes out. Oh, seriously, though, I'm a great student of the supermarket. And I say that the real person comes out in the area of one of the most basic of all animal drives, food. Oh, yeah, this is where it is, see? Oh, yeah. And the other night, I'm in this village, this village deli, you know, the kind that's open all night, see? And they sell, frozen peas, and they sell frozen asparagus. They got a little cheese. And they've got, I guess it's a prop, they've got a shelf with a lot of dusty canned goods. And they appear to be selling a lot of other stuff. Who knows, you know? Bananas. All kinds of strange cigarettes. It's 2 o'clock in the morning, see? And I walk in. And, you know, innocently, I want, you know, it's kind of terrible to walk into a place like that, you see, and you've come in for a quart of milk. So, you know, I get a little kind of defensive, see. So I go up to the frozen food counter, you know, and there's the milk and stuff, and I pick up the milk. How many of you always pick up the milk and you look at the bottom to see whether it's leaking? You pick it up, you see, and you just realize now how they've gotten around that. They've just emptied a quart of milk over all of them, see? So it's dripping, you know, all over the place. You put that one down, the next one's dripping more. They say, well, the hell with it, you know? It's going to leak. I'll suck it out of the bottle. See? Oh, yeah, we all have these little tricks. So I take my quart of milk, and then all of a sudden, see, in the doorway comes five people, the type you see in the village all the time at 3 a.m. They come floating in formation. You know, they drifted all through the supermarket there and didn't touch the ground once. I could hear the bells tingling, you know. And they drifted past me. I says, oh, fellas, they drifted on me. Hi. And I walked over to the cash register. Let me describe the scene. It's 2:30 in the morning. See, it's rough. I mean, outside you can hear fist fights. And occasionally you hear the sound of a siren wailing, which is the most ubiquitous sound in New York. 24 hours a day in the middle distance, you hear, whoo, and they're bearing another victim away. Another victim of God knows what. You don't know. You don't even look. And here it is at 2:30 in the morning, I hear the sirens going. And these five guys drift by me with their tight purple pants and their little gold elk shoes. The little bells on the toes, you know. Oh, yeah, you know. And they always have magazines with them called Adam. You know, there's a magazine called The Guts Way of Life. And so, I'm in the middle of all this, and I go up to the cash register with my little quart of milk, and I put it down, and all of a sudden, in the doorway comes this apparition. And this guy is wearing these rough-looking, they're all battered and worn. He's got these tight whipcord riding pants. And he's got these high cattle boots. And, you know, they're all cut up. You can see they've been slashed by rattlesnake bites. Yeah, you can buy them now already slashed by rattlesnake. Oh, yeah, this guy walks in. He's 6'9", so he's got big shoulders. And he's wearing an Australian bush hat. You know, the kind that they wear out back. In fact, when I was in Australia, even the Australians are embarrassed to wear them. I'm not kidding. You know, it's a great big hat, and it's got a band around it of dead leopard skin. You know, showing he's killed the leopard with his bare hands. This guy's got, and he's got a leather jacket, see, and he's got a thick 3-day growth of beard. And he walks in, see. You know, you can hear everything but the 45s clanking at his waist. I look around and says, my God, at last in the village. I wouldn't have believed it. A real man has come in. He walks past me. And I can smell him as he goes by, you know. It's been a good 6 days since he's been out in the rain, even. I mean, here's a gamey one, you know. He's got a 3-day grumble. I mean, you know, he's got moss growing on his jacket, you know. He walks past, and I say, what's he going to buy? He walks past me, you know, past the frozen food, and he rips open that great big, you know, they have this big refrigerator thing hanging on the wall, you know, and they've got this big 4-gallon bottle of beer. They got beer. They got ale. This guy rips it open. See, he's got the big hat, the bull whip hanging down, and he reaches in, pushes the bottles aside. Now look at him. And those 6 other little guys with their elf shoes. They're floating around him, you know. And he rips those bottles apart, and he reaches in. He turns around with his eyes blazing. And there in his hand is a big, cold bottle of strawberry Yoo-Hoo. I mean, friends, real Yoo-Hoo is for kids. I mean, strawberry Yoo-Hoo, believe it or not, friends, is for kids that can't make the chocolate Yoo-Hoo see. I mean, he's working his way up. And so I'm standing in my supermarket the other day, and this tall, thin lady, see, and she's emaciated. She's got sunken cheeks. She looks like one of those ladies out of those late, late movies. You know, the kind of part that Gail Sundergaard always played. You know, with the evil, she lives in one of those English manor houses. You know, high on the hill, where the wind eternally blows in over the moors. And you can hear the sound of evil mastiffs out in the darkness, created by Sir Conan Doyle. Yeah, you hear the sound of dogs going, ooh. You know, the kind of movie that opens up, it looks like it's shot underwater. And it comes on just before the Mr., you know, that commercial that has Mr. Clean on it, late at night. And after that, the Preparation H commercial comes on. You know? And you know, one of the things I love to do when I watch late, late movie is about 3 o'clock in the morning, I always wait for the news. You know, they come on, I go, ta ta ti 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 ti. They say, Channel 28 News. And they flash a picture of New York on it. And you hear the guy starting to give the news. And I'd say at least 3 times out of 5, he's drunk. I love to hear a drunken announcer give the news at 4 o'clock in the morning, just before the transcribed prayer comes on. You get such a great juxtaposition of evils, you know. You know, speaking of transcribed prayers, how many of you are fans of those various transcribed reverends? You know, it goes, da, 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 dee, and it's got a terrible wow on it. Nothing is sadder than to hear Bringing in the Sheaves at 4 o'clock in the morning being played on a very bad soundtrack. You know, da, dee, dee, dee. And then he comes on, and he starts to talk. And you can see he's reading an idiot sheet. If there's anything that's demoralizing, it's seeing a reverend blessing me on a transcribed prayer at 2 o'clock in the morning, and he's reading it from a cue sheet. You see his eyes going. And he's giving you the 23rd Psalm, and obviously he doesn't remember it. I keep watching his eyes, see? And then, if you have the kind of mind that I have, you know, you wait till the last instant, and he goes off, and then my mind says, I wonder whether God gives any kind of rerun. I mean, does a prayer that's transcribed and is being played for the 34th time count as much as the first time it's given? Or does this just come up in heaven and it's marked scale? Get back to it, huh? Oh, I'm a pro, you know. Here's that tall, skinny lady, and she's in the Gristini, see? And I see what she's got. How many of you spend your time in the supermarket looking at other people's stuff? You know, this guy's got 9 bottles of martini mix. 9 bottles of martini mix and a small bottle of vitamins. He's walking. You can imagine this guy's home life, you know. You can just see the place he lives, you know, the crud up to your knees. There's a dead dog somewhere got in. You know, and 3 years ago he turned his TV set on and forgot it. Now it burned up, and it's just laying there. You know, that kind of stuff. I'm behind this lady, see, and I look over at her, you know, her little pile of her little pile of viands for today, her victuals, and she's got a little loaf of high protein, no taste bread. It says health bread in big red letters. And next to it, she has a full carton of no nicotine cigarettes. And she's got 4 cases of Diet Pepsi. And I looked at that, see. And next to it, you know, are you aware that people of this type always own cats? They all voted for Barry Goldwater. And they're given to wearing tennis shoes. Well, here's this lady. See, she's a real health nut, I can see. And she says to the kid behind the counter, and this is a real hip kid, you know. He's got the black shades. You know, the kind of kid, you know. He's got a couple of dirty buttons on his, you know, on his... And those kids, to really make people mad, you know, they wear the white apron, and somehow they manage to get a bloody handprint on it. You know, blood, you know, and this kid is up there running this machine. He says, Diet Pepsi, dunk, 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 dunk. No nicotine cigarettes, dunk, 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 dunk. Saccharin, dunk, 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 dunk. No cal, cat food, dunk, 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 dunk. He ad-libbed it. And the lady says to him, no, really, I'm so glad. Well, I'm behind this lady, see, and I can imagine her home life. I imagine that not only does she have no cal, soft drinks, and no nicotine cigarettes, but everything else is no cal. I'll give you a little time to think about that. I mean, everything, because it's all connected, see? I mean, sin, each sin is not disconnected. Greed, you know, is connected with sex. In fact, very few guys that get hung on sex are not greedy. How many times, fellas, have you walked down the street, you know, down Fifth Avenue, see, and you're with this beautiful girl, see? You're walking down the street, see, and she's clinging to your elbow. And ahead, you see this gigantic covey of beautiful chicks. And something inside of you goes, boing. Then you see there's 45 of them. They all look good. And it goes, boing, 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 boing. Boingity, boing, boing, boing. Then it says, let's give a try for all of them. And then you keep saying, no, I'm with this beautiful girl. And that little thing inside says, yeah, but look at that. I mean, if this chick on your elbow is something, just imagine what those other 47 might be. Oh, women don't know what goes on deep in the gut of men. I can just see the crowd here now, girls turning to their dates and their husbands say, what's he talking about? And the husband says, oh, I don't know, he's some kind of nut. You ought to see how they're changing. Girls now are reaching across the table for reassurance. They're grabbing them. Like, I wonder how many times have you sat in a restaurant, you know, you go in this real great restaurant, you know, a kind of place where it's $7 just to sit, you know. You know, you come in, you sit down, and they bring in a menu, and all of a sudden you are aware at the next table, that little short, fat slob with the glasses has hit the jackpot. You look over at her, see? Holy smokes. And she's sitting there, you know, and she's, you know, she's got the liver pate, the sparkling wines. And then you look over across, you say, no, don't look at her. You swing over, and at the other table, which is now at 10 o'clock, high. There are three of them sitting. And it's only later that you notice the middle one has a mustache. You look over there, see? And you're playing with your food, you know. Here you're with this beautiful girl. And something inside of you keeps saying, that other table, that's where real life is being lived. You eat your liver pate and it's greasy. Your wine burns your nose. And you look over at the other ones and these people look like they're having such a great time. The wine bubbles. And that's the syndrome that makes almost all of us feel like we've been cheated in life. The other table syndrome. Yeah. Now, I don't think women have that problem. This is a male problem. In fact, whenever I talk to anybody about Playboy magazine, women keep saying, I don't understand why they have that centerfold on. I have never yet heard one man say that. Not once. It never seems to elude the men. By the way, wouldn't it be fascinating if Vogue had a centerfold out? Have you wondered which way it would go? Oh, you got it down there, huh? Can't you see it open up and here's this tall girl with big whipcord pants, you know? Call me Bobby. Oh, no, no, I just love to see, you know, if Vogue decided to go all the way and come out with a centerfold out, you know, and every month there's a new one, see? And the chicks grab the magazine, you know, it comes out the 15th of the month, they shake it, and out he comes, Here he stands, you know, his shirt is ripped open, his hair is sticking out, you know, and he's wearing this bikini made out of leopard skin, and underneath it it says, your playmate for this month. Yeah, there he is, big red apple rot. His hobby is dirty books. Have you ever noticed what they say, by the way, under the girls in Playboy? You ever read the captions? Nobody ever talks about that. Yeah, they always show this chick, see? And she's fantastic. I mean, she really is fantastic. You have a feeling that somewhere she's got four valve stems. Just think about that for a while. You know, she is, and they always show her, and she's looking out of a shower, see? Yeah, and whoa, fantastic. She's like about, I'd say, roughly 45 beach balls going downhill. She's peering out. And you know, wow, you know, you see, what kind of a home life does she live? You can see the water coming down, you know, wow. And underneath it, it says, Miss September, Barbie Barbie. They always have names like Barbie, Jackie, Nikki. They never have anybody named Arlene Applerot. Says Barbie Barbie. Barbie's favorite reading material is Schopenhauer and Kant. Have any of you ever read old Schopi? Oh, he's a gas, I'll tell you. Especially the illustrated editions, you know, with the woodcuts, you know. Oh, yes, Schopenhauer and Kant. And underneath it, it says, she also enjoys fine music, leans towards Vivaldi. Vivaldi. And then it says, she is a student and taking her master's at NYU. She's got it all. I mean, you know, she reads Schopenhauer and Kant. And, you know, and she listens to Vivaldi, and she's still got those four valve stems. Then underneath it, the last line, it says, she is majoring in slum clearance. And you wonder just how she's going to clear the slums. You know. And this is the typical caption underneath, you know, of the Playboy bunny type girl, see? Which always shows, probably more completely than anything that you can find in today's contemporary literature, the difference between the dream and reality. Oh, yeah. I know many a guy who reads Playboy every month. And every month he waits, the 15th of the month, see? And it comes in the mail. The word has arrived from the house. The house, you know, occupies the same position as Mount Olympus does in another earlier religion. Maybe Mount Ararat. And every month, Hefner comes down out of the mountain with lightning playing around his head. And for only 60 cents, you can buy these tablets. He comes down, you know, and he hands it out. And every month, there are millions of guys out there in the darkness right now listening who can hardly wait, fellas. It's only going to be another 26 days. And then she'll come. She'll be there. And they take it. See, and they shake it. The instant it comes, they rip the wrapper off. They shake it. And out she bounces. Hefner has not let him down. And of course, what happens as he sits there in his little pad and he's looking at that fantastic picture? Oh. You know, and he's usually the kind of guy, you know, he weighs, I would say he's 5 feet four and weighs 205. He's the kind of guy that sweats even when he sleeps. You know the kind? And he wears pajamas that bind, keep going around the back, you know. The buttons keep popping off. And every night he lays there, you know. And there's a crack that runs up behind his little bed and the sink drips. And the only excitement he gets is once in a while the refrigerator works in his pad. But every month this comes, see. Every month. And he tears it open and looks at it. There she is. And she's always from some magnificent place that's off in the distance, like someplace like Big Sur, California. She always lives in a place like Acapulco. She never lives in Circleville, Ohio. But poor Charlie does. And then he looks at this picture, see, and he gets up. And he stares out of the window. And across the street is a real live girl. You know the kind, you know what I'm talking about, the real live girl. You know, the Montgomery Ward model. And she's walking down the street. And she's wearing her flowered print Toreador pants. And she does not look like 45 beach balls. She actually looks like about three watermelons that got loose. You know? And he looks out across the window there and he sees her. And the only light that comes back out of that darkened street is the reflected neon sign from the pool room that reflects off of her braces. And so he sits in his little pad. And he curses the day that he was born Charlie Gutstop. Why was I not born that man on page 45 where they show the full page illustration of the man who reads Playboy? You ever seen him 6 feet tall? And underneath it, it says he's suave. He's a man who plays hard. And he does. And all Charlie can do is look out across the window and look out across that street. And poor little Esther Jane across the street is buying her copy of Vogue.
We'll return to Gene Shepherd right after 5 minutes of news, which follows in a moment.
Frustration. Come on, let's hear it. Come on, boom! Thank you, thank you. That concludes tonight's salute to Mayor Lindsay. And you are mere putty. Oh, how does it feel not only to be putty, to be silly putty? Oh, yes, poor old fun Mayor Lindsay. Wonder how he's doing with the rats. Does Gracie Mansion have cockroaches? You know, somehow you think people who are like mayors and presidents, senators, they all live in a very rarefied world. You know, people like Richard Burton and Elizabeth Taylor, Laurence Olivier, the star world. And you know, it somehow, life doesn't work that way. Can't you just see Mayor Lindsay at Gracie Mansion? He sits down at the table for breakfast. You know, and he's all dressed up. You know, he wears those great-looking suits, wavy hair. His teeth have been painted for the day. You know, they've squared his jaw up. All the kids have been neatly wrapped in neoprene for the afternoon. You know, and Mrs. Lindsay is over at the other end of the table. And the maid comes in with a silver platter, lays it down. Mayor Lindsay reaches out and picks it up. And four roaches come out from under the cinnamon Melba toast. Four Democratic roaches. Now, have you ever had the feeling that even bugs have political affiliations? Have you ever had the feeling that roaches are basically Democrats? You can't imagine a Republican roach. I mean, you know, because my experience... Oh, yes, now I want to tell you a little story. Somebody said, tell a story tonight about cockroaches. Now, I'm a cockroach fan. I mean, there are people who love horses. There are people who even love Airedales. And let me tell you, You're talking to one of the very few qualified, and I admit it, I am a sinner. I hate dogs. Saying that in the mid-1960s in America, why, you could say anything about the flag and get applause. I mean, I could say anything about the government, and people will love me. But to admit that you cannot take dogs, well, I'll tell you why I can't take dogs. It depends on how you relate to a dog. Now, if you're a dog owner and this thing walks along by, you know, you're patting them on the head. That's your scene, you know. I mean, you can put up with all that slobber. You know, that's your scene. If you can spend half of your life standing next to fire plugs. Have you ever noticed the various types of looks that these very fastidious ladies adopt when their dog is... and all the kids are walking along. You know, and oh yeah, there are all kinds of little problems you got to work out, you know, when you've got dogs. But I'm a kid. When I first discovered that dogs and me don't make it, I was a kid, see. I was playing this kid part at the time. And I'm 8 years old, and I've just gotten a job. And every morning, I am delivering the Chicago Tribune. Now, they delivered the Chicago Tribune at this fantastic hour. It was 5:15. And the sun was always just coming up over the steel mills. And I would get out, and I would get on my bicycle. See, I had this Elgin Sears Roebuck bike. And I'd get on the bike, and the seat is cold. And I was always wearing these blue jeans, and they're always cold in the morning, see. My tennis shoes have got water in them. And I've always got on this T-shirt, see, and a corduroy hat. And every morning, I had two big sacks hanging on my back. Great big, you know, big cross things across me. 75 pounds of Chicago Tribune over here. 85 pounds over here. See, I'm basically a righty. And I get on my bike, see. I'm setting down. Have you ever watched a newsboy deliver papers? It is an art in itself. It's one of the unsung talents. And I've always felt that every job that a man has, whether he works on a garbage truck or whether he's an electronic computer repairman, there are little satisfactions that the public does not know about. And as a newsboy, I would go out on my route, you know, and it's now 5:30. I've got them all packed in there, see. And by the way, the Chicago Tribune, in case you don't know about this newspaper, this is the paper that says on the front of it, the world's greatest newspaper. How's that for a chutzpah? Well, the Times says all the news that's fit to print. I mean, that's a pretty gutsy statement. Don't you wonder about the stuff they don't print? Would you love to read that? You see all of that in the Enquirer. You know, there's always a front page that says, axe murderer slays nine. Boils them up in the basement to make soap. Gives soap to girlfriend for Christmas. And you wonder why you never saw it in the Times. You know, such great murders. And so every morning I am out with the Chicago Tribune. And incidentally, the Chicago Tribune has an editorial page that's made out of concrete. I mean, you know, it's a very heavy one. And I'd go out in the morning. See, it's 5:30 in the morning. I get out. I got the old Elgin going, see, and the seat's starting to get hot. You know, and now I arrive at the first house on my route, see, and it was I can still see it. It was a two-story house with one of these apartments above and an apartment below, and it had this peaked roof. Well, now, a newsboy learns all kinds of deliveries. See, and this one here is on my left, see. So I reach into this sack, see, pumping all the while, pull out a paper, and I would wait until my left wing was even with the basement door. See, you just have to play it. It's all timing, see. And then right at the precise moment, an underhand shot, and then up and over and behind the left shoulder, like that. I'd wait, see, one, two, three, and then I would hear, dunk, dunk, dunk. That's three straight days into the water drain pipe, 3 days running. And it's not easy to hit a little drain pipe that wide on the fly, you know. And then I would go three more doors down, and they had this, on this one, they had a long porch, see. And on this porch, there was one of these boxes of geraniums. It was sticking out, see. And every day, I tried to pick another geranium. You know, on that house, I always used a flat trajectory, see, because I could not only get the geranium, but once in a great while, on the ricochet, the front door with the glass pane. I sing, you know, and I just pick off the head, you know, sing. Oh, it's going to be a good day, see. Oh, Shep is swinging, you know. And then the third house, oh, this was always the test. You know, in every job, there's a test. I'm sure that each one of you guys has got one little thing during your day, you know, that is the moment of decision. To most executives, it's who he's going to lunch with. Now, that's the big moment of the day. And I've got this friend who's a radiologist. And every day when he's looking at all these beautiful pictures, you know, he's got about 100 different big x-rays, he's always hoping that one day he will see a golf ball. You know, he's seen two tennis balls, but he happens to be a golf nut, you know. And so that third house was my favorite house because it was one of those houses, you know, that's got a passageway that runs up the side and there's two apartments off each one. And the house on the top floor got the paper. And always sitting right in the corner of the top landing, right stuck in the corner, was this metal can. This metal can was one of these things that ladies used to scrub floors with. And I used to hope every day as I would play the shot. See, it's going up the stairs. You know, it's a slider, actually, you had to throw. For those of you that are baseball fans, you had to get that low spin, you know, and up and down. See, and I'd come along like that, and you put the spin on the wrist, and you'd see it climbing up the stairs. See, it would hit the third stair down and go thunk, 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 thunk. Dunk, dunk, splash. And I'd hear all that water go all over, see. And then there was always a brief pause, and then I would hear this scream of rage. Come out of the house, ow-wee-ow! And then I would holler back, ow-wee-ow! Nothing is more satisfying than an obscene gesture at 5:30 in the morning. Well, all right now, you want to know about the dog, see? I would go about halfway through my route, and then the bad scene would start. I would get into dog country. I mean, you know, it's like a hunter in Kenya. You know, when he enters leopard country, instantly he's on the alert. He has left gazelle country, and now he's where the rhino lurks. Well, now I was right in the heart of Airedale country. And I remember how they used to play me. There was, on this side of the street, there were two spits and a chow. I mean, is there somebody in this crowd who actually likes a dog named a Spitz? Isn't that a terrible name? Spitz. I mean, polite society doesn't even say it. Well, I had two spits and a chow. Now, let me tell you about this chow. He had stainless steel teeth. He had a purple tongue. He weighed 400 pounds. And he used to wait. He was the kind of dog that would wait like a dash runner. And I'd see those two red eyes, see? Well, always, I was euchred in it all the time. I would come along, and I would see the chow, see? And I would see the two spitzes, and I would begin to prepare for their attack. I would pull to the left, and that damn Airedale would come out of the privet hedge and grab my left knee. Every time, you know, these were the decoys, see? Well, he would slow me up, and the chow would hit me from behind. Well, I don't know whether you have ridden ever in your life an Elgin bike for four blocks with an Airedale hanging out of your left knee. I doubt very much whether many of you have. And so, you get very good. You know, I used to work like this. I used to work on little things. See, like many of the times, I would hold my knee out. Like, here it is, fellas. And I would just wait at that precise moment. The Airedale would go, he'd leap, see? And I would catch him in the groin, see? Then I'd flip him in the head, you know, and hit him with a Tribune as he's falling. So within every little industry, there are techniques. And I used to get through this day, you know, I used to hate dogs. But then came that day. Never forget. The day of the supreme moment of education. And it always came, you know, when you're dealing with money. I mean, I think this is one of the areas of human... I mean, you go to the Polynesian Islands, and they got shells. It's their money. And they will fight over it. Well, I used to go around and collect. Have any of you ever collected for a paper on a Saturday morning? You know, you'd knock on a door. You got your little book. The door would open, and there standing in the door is a guy wearing nothing but a BVD. His eyes are red. You know, it's Saturday morning, and this guy works in the steel mill. And his pay comes Friday night, and he's been drinking it for 18 straight hours. And you look at him, you say, I'll collect for the paper. Shut up. 84 cents. Boom! I know how Willie Loman feels. Well, every week, though, there was this great moment. I looked forward to it. There was this simple little brown house, and I used to go up the stairs, and I would knock on the door. And the door would open, and instantly out of the house would come this heady, thick aroma. It smelled like incense, dime store perfume. And out of the darkness would come this lady wearing this filmy thing. She'd come out, and she'd stand there, and she'd say, yes. And she'd, paper boy. And she'd say, yes, what can I do for you? 36 cents. And she'd say, oh, I'll see. I'll get it. And she would disappear, and I'm standing out. This was my big moment every week. I'd look forward to collecting from this lady. And she would disappear into the darkness. And I'd smell that aroma. And then she'd come out and she'd give me 36 pennies. And they were hot. I'd take them, say, thank you. She'd say, think nothing of it. Will you be back next week? Say, yeah. Week after week. And I would go home and I would think about it, see. Because I'd always heard these stories, you know, of milkmen. You know, the whole shtick, you know. And when you're 9 years old, you dream, you know. And I always imagined myself one day coming up there in my blue jeans, you know, strong and handsome. And she says, come in. And 10 minutes later, I never went any further. You see, because at that time, I was still listening to Little Orphan Annie. You know, and I didn't know what quite would happen. But these are the moments that all of us live in. These moments of education. And you know, a couple of nights ago, I did a show in front of a bunch of kids. Now I want you to listen. And all these kids are sitting out there and they had just started school. It was over in New Jersey. And I looked out over them and I said, all right, what is your favorite story? Which story would you like to hear since you have just gone back to school? And they sat out there. And finally, one little kid put his hand up. And I said, yes. And he says, I'm speaking for the whole junior class. I says, yes, there's always one kid who thinks he does. I want to hear the story of May, the second grade stripper. And the entire school went ape. Do you want to hear the story of May, the second grade stripper, tonight? Come on, let's hear it. Well, I'll tell you, I saved this story. Now, I don't know whether we've got a whole bunch of the guys here. By the way, this crowd sitting at this table, in case you're interested, is a group of athletes, and they come down to the limelight a lot, and they're with the New York General soccer team. Give them a hand. Come on, stand up, man. Come on, come on. They're soccer players. You know, and the reason I did that right at this moment is because I don't know much about the English school system. And I really don't know how kids act in an English school. But all of us here are Americans, and before we go any further, let's get the station break out of the way so we can go right ahead. What fantastic, deep-thinking radio station is this, gang? Let's hear it. And what fun city are we in? That's right. And right about now, they're towing your car away. Right about now. Yeah, they always wait till about 11:30. In fact, you can hear the bumpers clank, and you guys are all going to like it down at the docks. That's part of the trip to New York on a Saturday night, going down and getting your car out of the slam. You know, I always have a hope when I go down there that instead of the tin can that I drive, they're going to give me the keys to an Aston Martin. They always seem to know my car. And I noticed one thing about the cops that tow your car away. They're very creative. In fact, every time they've towed my car away now, and it's been over 12 times, they did it in a different spot. Oh, yeah, they always say, we didn't do nothing to it. You don't argue with the fuzz. Not when he's holding a $45 ticket in his hand. You know? That's part of life's little education. You learn who to argue with and who not to. You learn who to hit and who to let hit you. Oh, yes, that's part of growing up. And this is one of the things that you learn in school, you see, in America. In school, in America, there is always one kid in usually every class who's the bully. Do you have them in England? There's always one kid. He's always got a name like Nick. You know, it's never Clarence. It's never Howard. You know, or Marty. It's always Al. Now, this is a boy thing. Girls don't know about this. Not really. There's always an Al or a Nick, and he's got a toady. Now, that toady is usually got a rotten name like Cliff. And he's snively. He's got yellow eyes. And he's always standing next to Al saying, hit him. And there you are, you know, you're a little innocent Charlie standing next to the swings. And we had this bully named Grover Dill. I mean, how about that for a bully named Dill? Ooh, Dill. Yeah. Even now, I get a sick feeling in my gut when I think of Grover Dill. He had narrow, slanty eyes. And Dill used to come out and stand around next to the swings. Yeah, we had swings. Nobody ever swung on them. I mean, we had swings out in the yard there, you know. We did other things. We, you know, played craps and stuff, but never swing. And he'd stand next to the swing, see, and every day, Grover would look for the kid that he's going to hit today. And me and Schwartz and Bruner and Flick, all the rest of us, you know, were always drifting around. And one of the great moments, though, was when Grover would say hi to you and not hit you. I mean, well, they're great. I think all males secretly have a desire, really, to have somebody like Frank Costello come up to him and say, "Why, Howie, how are you?" And you're sitting there in the Four Seasons. And everybody knows you know Lucky Luciano. You know, there's a secret desire to connect yourself with evil. I mean, it's not necessarily true you want to be evil, but you like to get recognized by it. And so I'm standing out in the yard one day, me, Flick, Schwartz. It's recess time. Do you remember recess time? Do they have those in English schools? They let you out for 10 or 15 minutes. It's an early coffee break is what it is. I mean, in America, we call it the coffee break. And the kids all stand around, you know. And the wind is blowing like mad. It's winter, see. And they used to just push us out of school for 15 minutes. Out of the warm school, and we'd stand in the sand with our earmuffs on. What are you going to do? You know, the ground is frozen. You go clink, clink, clunk, you know. But the wind is howling down over the top of the school. Ooh! And we're wearing our sheepskins.
From out of the fog, London Fog presents The Fog. Tonight, the Barge Inn Affair. Last week, the fog was driving across the 59th Street Bridge to enroll at NYU for the 14th time, when, noticing a garbage barge in the river...
Hey, that's not a barge. That's a Tolstoy 717 nuclear aircraft carrier, and it's heading towards the UN.
Wearing his Andes main coat, the fog dives into the icy waters, right into the train piranha behind the barge. Can the fog stop the barge and still make registration? Join us next week for... Fog. From London Fog's Andes and Radcliffe main coats of blue sea polyester and cotton and treated with Scotchgard fabric protector.
Dum da dum dum. London Fog main coats are available at B.B. Lorry's and Gimbel's.
In fact, they could stand by themselves. You know, they were aromatic, you know, and they were great, you know, and I'm walking, I had these holes in the pockets. And one great thing about knickers is when you drop stuff through the holes in the pockets, it gets around the knees. You know, you got bottle caps in your knees, all kinds of crud. Once in a while, I'd open up my pants and blah, it all pour out, you know. So on this great day, me and Flick and Schwartz and Bruner walking around, you know, with our knickers gone. And over in the corner there, Grover Dill is beating up Jack Morton. We didn't care. You know, there's always some kids in the class that don't count. I mean, they're not important enough to be nothings. And they're not bullies. They're just, you know, kind of a skinny kid that gets B+ on everything. You know, well, he's over there beating up Jack Morton. We didn't even bother to look. You know, you could hear Morton squeaking. You know, his head is banging against the ground. Dill, you know, is kicking him in the ribs. And Cliff is over here stepping on his knees, you know. We're watching, you know, walking around. And the girls, you know, always would gather in their own little place. You see, they're all huddled up against the building. The wind is screaming over us. It's recess, see. It's afternoon recess. Now, that was a good one, you see, because always I would save for the afternoon recess one half of a Twinkie. You know, Twinkies come in twos, you know. And I was hung on the banana Twinkie, see? And so I would save it for recess, and it would get frozen. I'm standing out there eating the Twinkie. You know, and Schwartz is eating the half of the sandwich that he always made. He'd bring the sandwich from home, and it was peanut butter. Listen carefully. Peanut butter, jelly, bananas, and mayonnaise. On raisin bread. And he's over there eating this thing. See, and I'm eating the Twinkie. You know, Flick is working his way through an apple. Little did we realize that the one of the great moments. I mean, we didn't learn anything in school. I mean, what are you going to, you know? I never did learn the multiplication tables. I mean, do you still today say, let's see, 8 times 5. 8 times 5. 8, 8, 8, 8, 8. You ever watch the lady, a lady in the Chase Manhattan Bank trying to add up her checks? And she puts little ones over everything and little twos, subtract ones, ones, all of little lines. You can see that her grade school education soaked in. And, you know, we never really learned anything. They read Raggedy Ann and Raggedy Andy to us. And once in a while, Miss Shields would say, now, children, 7 times 5 is what? And always, Eileen Aker's hand would go up. 35! And Schwartz would say, ugh. He wanted to kill her. And that's the way grade school went, hour after hour. We just would sit in our knickers fermenting. And all around the walls would be our artworks. I mean, you know, they pin them up. I was a pumpkin man. You know, for 8 straight years through grade school, I learned that I could get an applause from the art teacher by drawing a pumpkin. And I had these great pumpkins, and every year there's a pumpkin hanging. And maybe once in a while there'd be a turkey. I'd make a turkey, and then there'd be a Christmas tree. Every season there'd be a new thing. And then there would be an Easter bunny. You know, it was only later that we began to think of drawing other things. You know, kids go through that phase, too. And so now it's second grade, see, and we're out at recess. It's recess in the afternoon. We're standing. The wind is coming down. I'm wearing my sheepskin coat. I've downed the Twinkie. We got about another 10 minutes to go. We're just standing. And you can see all the windows of the school with the pumpkins in the windows. And once in a while, off in the distance, you could hear the fifth grade. And they are singing. See, they didn't have recess at the time we did. And you could hear them singing, America the beautiful, da, 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 da. And then you'd hear, ooh. You know, that little pitch pipe. You ever wanted to own a pitch pipe? You know, just blow it. And you'd hear, ooh. America, the beauty. And I'm standing next to Schwartz. And Flick is standing there eating his apple. When all of a sudden, over by the steps, about 100 yards away, there is a crowd gathered. Well, now, over here, Grover Dill was beating up Jack Morton. And there was nobody watching. So we figured it was an important fight. You know, an unscheduled fight. You know, it's an ad-lib fight. Who's beating who? You know, the only guy... there's Grover Dill. You know, who the heck's doing the fight? You know, the fighting. So Flick says, let's go over. And so instantly, we go over there with our sheepskins, you know, and we got the helmets on with the goggles. We're wearing the knickers. And there, in the middle of the crowd, there's about 50 of them, these kids all standing around. In the middle of the crowd is one girl. May. May was the quiet girl in second grade. Yeah, little May Wilson always sat in the back there with all the rest of us. You know, there's certain kids that just never make contact with any other kid. And you know, me and Schwartz, we had our friends, Flick, Brunner, George Doppler, Helen Weathers, big fat Helen sitting there. I mean, Helen Weathers was the only human girl we knew. You know, she did everything we did. She burped and everything, you know. All the other girls were kind of remote, you know. And there's Helen sitting there, you know, and Schwartz, all the people in the last part of the room. See, everybody in our school was alphabetical. And so all my friends were like Schwartz, Zinsmeister, Helen Weathers, you know. And I'm sitting in the back of the alphabet there, and back there was little May Wilson. She sat over in the corner and never said anything. And she was kind of a tall, pale girl. You know, the kind that always wears, her mother makes her wear pigtails? and her hair's going down the back. And she was very quiet. And she wore gold-rimmed glasses. And May, the instant school was out, she would disappear. She'd be gone. And the rest of us would walk down the street. You know, I would walk down the street home, and on the other side would be Esther Jane Alberry. She was from the A's, and hence was out of the other yard where the grass is greener. I used to walk along, and that was the first moment of love, of course. It was the first day that I threw a rock at Esther Jane. You know, and Esther Jane is walking along over there with Eileen Akers. I say, watch this, Schwartz. Wow. And it's going right at her. You know, that terrible moment of realizing that your wing has developed. It's going right at her. Watch out! And she turned, and it caught her on the side of the head. And as she spun up in the air and through the privet hedge, there was that look of pure love. And that was how Esther Jane and I first made it. And so these little things, you know, there was the whole life of our grade school. And Mae Wilson never entered any of this stuff. And now here it is. It's a cold fall day. The wind is howling down from Lake Michigan. It is screaming down out of the North Woods. And on the horizon, you see the flickering flames of the hell of the fires that are coming from the blast furnace, from the steel mills. And you can see the gray smoke rising. And you can hear the fifth grade class singing faintly, America, the beautiful, la ta ta ti ti ti, oh, your fields are waving, ta ta ta. Little did we realize that moment, we were about to receive the most educational instant of our entire school world. There in the crowd, right in the middle of that gang, was Mae Wilson. And she had her glasses off. And behind her, you know, girls always go in pairs. Men know this. For every beautiful girl, there is a dog. And if you know your girls, the beautiful girl always tells you the dog is a very nice girl. And you really should take her out. And that's who you usually take out. In fact, looking down, that's who you usually marry. And the beautiful ones go off into limbo somewhere, you know. Yeah, that's who we settle for. We always settle for the girlfriend. And so here in the middle of the crowd, I'm looking. See, I can't believe my eyes. And here is Schwartz next to me. And I hear Schwartz take that deep intake of breath. And here all around, the whole crowd, their eyes are like saucers. The second grade is assembled. The first grade is there. The third grade is there. Half of the fourth grade is there. The only crowd that isn't here, you know, is the fifth grade, and they're singing America the Beautiful. The sixth grade, they're taking their nap. And the only people that aren't in this crowd is old Grover Dill. He's still beating up Jack Morton, you know. And his buddy is still kicking Jack's knee. And we're standing looking. And there in the middle of it all is Mae Wilson. And Mae has her glasses off and she has taken her hair down. Her hair hung down to her waist. And it was blonde. It was floating in the wind. And she was taking off her blouse. She had taken off her sheepskin coat. Her high tops were off. And now she's taking off her blouse. And we're... And she's walking around like this. You know, thum, thum, thum. You can hear the tom-toms. I mean, you know, it was a wild moment. And behind her is her little girlfriend, Kathy. A little short, round girl, and she is carrying the blouse. You know, that's the girlfriend. She had the thick glasses. And May is taking her blouse off. And then I heard Schwartz say, take it off. Take it off. And she takes it off like this. Boom, boom. And she drops it. And it goes, tuka, 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 tuka. And all around us were the windows with pumpkins hanging in them. And then she had this skirt, see? And it was one of these, you know, the kind of skirts that all kids wear in grade school? It's got all the pleats, you know, and it's kind of tartan plaid. You know, the kind of skirt, and it's got a tight band, see? Well, you know, there had been a lot of conjecture about those skirts among Schwartz and Flick and Bruner and me. And here she is. She's going like this. And you can hear, boom, da-da-doom, da-da-doom. The drums are beating. And the whole crowd is gathering and watching. And you can hear Grover Dill has stopped hitting Morton's head against the sand. And Morton is getting up. He's got a bloody nose. The word has gotten over, even to the fight, that May is stripping. And he comes over and he's standing there. You see, the whole crowd is gathering. And now she takes that. You never saw such technique in your life. I don't know where she learned it. Little May, you know, she's got this skirt. And she goes, zip. And she holds it tight. Boom. I mean, it was wild. Even the girls were going out of their skull. I mean, Eileen Akers was sweating. And then, with that, with a dramatic flourish, and she flicks her hip. Down comes the skirt. There's a roar of applause. Hooray! You know, it's all out there. Now kids are coming from George Rogers Clark School. They were seven blocks away. You see, the word had gotten out. Kids are pouring down for blocks, you know. And now she's got this little slip, see? Now, you know how these little slips are. You know, it's a little slip, see, and it's got a little band around it of elastic. We're watching this, see? And she takes her thumb. What a gesture. She goes, thum, 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 thum. Snap. She's popping that elastic band. Well, now, I must give you a little flashback. Our principal of our school was a lady named Miss Norton. Miss Norton was made out of pure carborundum. She was a tall, thin maiden lady who had steel gray hair. She had steel gray glasses. She wore a steel gray sensible suit. I mean, always. She wore that suit every day in school, and she wore space shoes. I always say, watch out for a vegetarian who wears space shoes. You know the kind of shoes, you know, that look like Frankenstein shoes? And here is Miss Norton, you know, year after year, she has been presiding over our world in her gray suit. Well, outside, right now, taking off a plaid, tartan plaid skirt, is little May. The crowd is cheering. And you know, we're excited because there's only a minute and a half left of the recess. I mean, this chick was a born showman, you know? She was playing us for all we were worth, you know, and out there in the distance we could hear, America. How symbolic. The beautiful. We see these things that flow. And little May takes that elastic band and she goes, ka-doing. And then she stands stock still in the crowd. And her hair is floating. Floating like this golden nimbus around her. What a vision. Little Kathy is standing behind her, holding the blouse. And she's got the skirt. And Schwartz is now down on his knees. I mean, and I'll tell you, my Twinkie. I mean, out of pure excitement. Have you ever had an excitement stomach? Well, my stomach was flipping up so much that my Twinkie was making a return engagement. You know, he was coming up for seconds, see? Holy smokes, it's actually happening, what we always dreamed of. Me and Schwartz and Flick and Bruner, once in a while one of us would draw, you know, what we thought a girl was like on the back, maybe on the back fence, back of Mrs. Mattingly's house. But here was the real thing. And she's standing there with her slip. And it's getting colder. And you can hear You can hear the American flag. You know how they have this big metal flagpole? And it's got this rope that goes up the side of it. And the wind is hitting it, and it's going thawing, thawing. And May is using that for the beat. Thawing, thawing. And she flipped like that. May Wilson. And down in a cloud of silken rayon goes her Sears Roebuck slip. Just whoo. And there she is. All she's left in are these little pink things that went down to her knees. You know, these little pink things, and they had little round rubber things where you hook the garters on. The whole crowd is waiting. And Schwartz has got this Mickey Mouse watch. I mean, we got about 10 seconds left to go. And she takes the elastic band of those little panties. She goes, ka-thung. And her little stomach goes, kaboom. Holy smokes. Oh, boy. And then all of a sudden, just as we are about to hit pay dirt, the door of the school slams open. And there, standing on the steps, is Miss Norton. And she looks down, and there's May with her hair floating. And here's the crowd. They have just finished the giant chant of, take it off! And she says, and how many times have you heard this in school? What's going on here? It wasn't what was going on. And instantly, Miss Norton saw that it was what was coming off that was happening. And she looked out, and little May, you know, her eyes gleaming, without a word. What tact, what poise. She takes her little slip, pulls it up, puts her little blouse on. The entire lower grades had been caught in sin. You know, watching is as much a sin as taking off. We stood there. And May, boy, with that look, she puts on her slip and puts on her skirt. And Miss Norton just stood and looked. Her iron gray hair with the wind blowing through it. You could hear it picking up that tortoise comb. You could hear a high C flat note. And back in the distance, they are finishing the last few phrases. America, the beautiful. And then the bell went, ah! And all of us lined up, and in we came. Very innocent. We sat down, and up in front of the class was Miss Shields, our teacher, who every day during recess sat and ate celery. She never went out. She would sit and eat celery with a little salt shaker. And she had this set of dentures. Have you ever had a second grade teacher who ate celery with dentures going? I mean, somehow it's all part of the educational scene. And Miss Shields looks down at us, you know, innocently. She didn't know what happened. And we all sat down, we looked. And you know, it was snowing out now. And something must have rung a bell in her head. Why is the entire second grade sweating? And she looks down and she says, well, did you have fun at recess? You know, wow, instantly the whole class, yeah. And then the telephone rang. You know, we had this little telephone in the corner of the room, and it goes ding, ding. And Miss Shields goes over and picks it up. She says, yes. May? Little May Wilson? She did what? And here's May sitting in the back. She's got her glasses on again. And she has withdrawn to her original status. She's no longer with us. Helen Weathers is sitting in front there, burping a little bit. And she says, May did what? She did. There we sat. 36 little debauched sinners in second grade, surrounded by our pumpkins. And she looked down and sat at her desk. You know, teachers have these desks for a long moment. And then she said, well, as you know, every day after recess in the afternoon, before we take our nap, we read Raggedy Ann and Raggedy Andy. And in spite of what happened today, I'm going to read Raggedy Ann and Raggedy Andy. See, she was trying to pretend that we were still interested in the camel with the wrinkled knees. There's a certain type of people that in spite of what they see in front of their face have to pretend that it ain't happening. And so she got up there with her little book and she says, as you all remember, Raggedy Ann and Raggedy Andy were about to visit the balloon fairies. Raggedy said, Ann, we should have a lot of fun today. Children, don't you think they will have fun with the balloon fairies? We're all leaning forward. She says, aren't you curious as to what Raggedy Ann and Raggedy Andy did when they had their picnic? Yeah. We were always waiting for Raggedy Ann and Raggedy Andy to get to that point. But they never did. And so Miss Shields read Raggedy Ann and Raggedy Andy. And we went on into the nap time. And after that, we had arithmetic. And then we went home. But the next day came the payoff. Every morning before school started, we would all gather in the gymnasium every morning, and we would swear allegiance to the flag. Do you remember that? I swear allegiance to the flag, blah, 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 brave, clean, and reverent. And then we would sing, God bless America. And every morning we would be led by Miss Norton. Remember that? Every morning, Miss Norton with her iron gray hair, with her iron gray glasses, with her iron gray wool shirt and skirt. And we all gathered in there the next day. And boy, were there a lot of rumors that night back in the garage about Mae Wilson. All of a sudden, Mae was a star. I'll tell you, we forgot all about Eileen Akers, you know. Mae Wilson was all they ever talked about after that. Well, that morning, we're all standing in there, and Miss Shields has got the piano. You know, the piano they always play. They sit over there and they play, da, 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 da. And we're all standing. And in comes Miss Norton. And the entire lower grades, the whole crowd, the first grade, the second grade, the third grade, the fourth grade, everybody but the fifth grade, they were taking another nap. The entire crowd goes, Miss Norton comes in and she is wearing a plaid skirt. Schwartz looks at me and says, what's this? Everyone was hoping that as we're singing the God, you know, God Save America or Hooray for the Field of Waving Grain or whatever it was, Miss Norton was going to grab that zipper. Well, Miss Norton just looked down on us and she says, children, she flicks her skirt. And you know, for the first time, she had her hair down. I guess Miss Norton got an idea or two from Mae Wilson. She had her hair down, and she was wearing Harlequin glasses with purple frames. Miss Norton looks down and says, children, instead of singing America the Beautiful this morning, any of you have a song you'd like to sing? Well... There was a song that the second grade always sung out in recess when none of the teachers were around. How many of you remember it? It was a song that went like this. Oh, the monkey puts his tail out. Well, Flick says, Miss Norton, how about the one about the monkey puts his tail? She says, very good. She says, do you know that, Miss Shields? And Miss Shields says, you bet. And the entire lower grade sang, when the monkey puts his tail, let's sing it, when the monkey puts his tail around the flagpole. Isn't art wonderful, friends? Let's hear it. Come on.
This is WOR Radio, your station for news.